How Not to Fly Blind During the Next Financial Crisis. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. After the 2008 financial collapse, the government required banks to prove if they failed someday, it would not drag down the rest of the financial system, requiring a bailout. The documents to prove this are known informally as living wills. Last summer, it emerged that a range of U.S.-based banks still pose too much of a systemic risk if they were to go bankrupt. Today, several published reports say three foreign-owned banks also lack persuasive living wills, according to regulators. BNP Paribas, HSBC, and Royal Bank of Scotland. The banks are not commenting. The story today is a reminder that financial crises will happen again. This time, however, the government has set up a kind of war room to monitor the financial system for signs of trouble. Richard Berner is director of the Office of Financial Research, an independent arm of the U.S. Treasury Department. Mr. Berner, good morning.
Good morning, David.
Now, I remember at the height of the financial crisis, policymakers and the public learned to their horror that we were really flying blind. We weren't quite sure what was going on with the world economy when it was under stress.
That's certainly true. We didn't completely understand how the financial system really functioned in all of its dimensions, nor did we have complete data to measure financial activity. So that's why we were set up, to fill those gaps in our understanding and to fill the gaps in how we measure financial activity.
I couldn't help but notice recently you put out an interesting paper about the Federal Reserve's so-called stress tests of the big banks. What was the issue raised that those tests may be, what, too similar year to year?
Well, the issue raised is whether or not those tests and the process is too predictable. It means that institutions can go through and do the same thing that they did last year. So maybe they are overlooking some things. Maybe the people who are collecting the data are overlooking some things.
So here we are about 6.5 years since Lehman Brothers fell apart. We are, in fact, exactly this month, 6 years into what became the bull market. I suppose you don't have to look far in your office for sources of volatility. Greece comes to mind, but there are other places.
There always will be sources. So we've made some progress on our ability to identify and measure where the vulnerabilities in the financial system might be. Personally, I think this is going to be an ongoing endeavor. Financial innovation is something that is a constant, and the financial system and its component parts will always be changing. So tracking that is a full-time job.
May the force be with you in this endeavor. Richard Berner is director of the Office of Financial Research. This was set up under Dodd-Frank to keep an eye on market indications that might help us manage financial calamity. Mr. Berner, thank you.
Thank you, David.
There's news today about factories outside the U.S., starting in China, where an index of manufacturing fell in March. This is drawn from a survey of purchasing managers there. For a wider view, let's turn to Andrew Batson, China Research Director at Gavikal Dragonomics in Beijing. Mr. Batson, thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
So this factory data, lower than expected, weakest in 11 months, it says, low enough that the reading suggests not just slower growth, but maybe some contraction among factories. Does this fit with what you're seeing, Andrew?
Yeah, it definitely fits. We've seen a lot of pretty bad data coming out of China in the last couple of months. A lot of businesses that supply the construction sector, for instance, makers of construction materials, steel, cement, glass, all of these guys are doing pretty badly as there's a pretty severe slowdown in the real estate sector. And there's some other things going on as well, but generally the trend is pretty weak.
Now, this comes as not a complete shock. I mean, China has been on this slower path.
Most people in China and outside of China realize the super high rates of growth that we saw in the past were, to some extent, the result of unsustainable policies. I think another cut in interest rates certainly is very likely. I don't think the slowdown is necessarily producing or should produce kind of panic among officials, and I don't think we should interpret the fact that monetary policy is getting looser in China as a sign of panic, necessarily.
Andrew Batson is China Research Director at Gavikal Dragonomics in Beijing. Mr. Batson, thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Now, among countries that use the euro, an assessment of factories there today moved up to a four-year high. The euro itself continues its rally, up 0.4% to just under $1.10 right now. the U.S. government won't confirm, but it's widely expected to reaffirm its controversial approval of leases in the Arctic for oil drilling. Shell Oil wants to drill for oil and gas despite equipment failures and accidents there in 2012, perhaps drilling by this summer. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sarah Gardner reports.
U.S. regulators admit drilling in the Arctic is nothing like the Gulf of Mexico. Walter Cruikshank, deputy director of the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, says not only is it more remote,
it's also obviously an area that has a lot of harsh weather. So these sorts of things together mean that you have to operate a little bit differently in the Arctic than you would in other places.
Even the government estimates a 75% chance of a major oil spill there. The Interior Department is proposing tighter rules for Arctic drilling, including a containment dome nearby in case of a blowout. Marilyn Hyman with Pew Charitable Trust's U.S. Arctic program expects some industry pushback.
But I think it would be irresponsible to drill in the Arctic Ocean with those extreme conditions without these types of protections.
Shell has already spent nearly $6 billion in the Arctic, so the pressure to deliver on that investment, analysts say, is intense. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
Our producers are Justin Ho, Katie Long, and Meg Kramer. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.